how do we see the money of I take out a loan, the loan is forgiven. How do we understand that money that was forgiven? Meaning, looking at the source number one on this source sheet, I just took from the SEBA-CUEC.ca, which I'm sure everyone here is familiar with, the SEBA loans that were given out by the Canadian government to businesses that were in need during COVID. And these, as far as I'm understanding, these loans were due in December, but they were recently voted to pushed off, I think, another 12 months or so until those loans are finally due. There's an interesting piece about these loans. And then that's source number one. The SEBRA program offered interest-free loans of up to $60,000 to small businesses and not-for-profits for eligible SEBA borrowers in good standing, repaying the balance of the loan on or before December 31st, 2023. I guess this is the extended one. Will result in loan forgiveness up to 33%, up to $20,000. So there's as long as someone pays X amount, they can have a certain amount forgiven. But what it had here on the website: does the SEBA loan forgiveness need to be reported in my income tax filing? And the answer is yes. The forgiveness portion of your SEBA loan is taxable. And that's sort of what I want to focus on for today, is how I'm understanding this is that the forgiven part of the loan is seen as income. So and any of my income, I have to pay a tax on that. So it's fair income that's taxable. And what I wanted to look at or compare that to the Torah's understanding of how loan forgiveness, debt forgiveness can work. So that's the direction that we're going to go. But before we get to any of that, I think it's important to focus on just in general the discussion of loan forgiveness in Judaism and in Jewish law. Again, a reminder to everyone who came in late, I'm going to periodically throw this out there. If you have not yet put your name in the chat box, please do so. That way I can make sure that you get credit. And also I'm putting again the source sheet, the links to the source sheet in the chat box. The first link is the PDF. The second link is the same. It's just a Word doc. Feel free to use whichever one you want of those. So there's a concept in Jewish law called the Shemitah. The Shemitah, we actually just finished this past Rosh Hashanah, concluded a Shemitah year. And there are certain things that are relevant. There are certain things that why this is Shemitah, how this impacts anything. So there are two texts that I want to look at first here, sources number one and source number two. So the first one is going to be more relevant to what we're talking about, is source number two. The Torah says, at the end of every 7 years, you shall make a release. This is the way of the release. Every creditor shall release that which he has lent to his neighbor. He shall not, but it applies to men and women. He shall not, he or she, shall not exact it of his or her neighbor and his or brother, because Hashem's release has been proclaimed. You may exact it from a foreigner, but whatever of yours is with your brother, your hand shall release. So there are two pieces here that are important, or several pieces here that are important to note. Point number one is that this is something that happens every 7 years. Every 7 years, the creditor shall release that which that creditor lent to the neighbor. You cannot, the creditor is not allowed to exact payment, but there's an interesting piece that the Torah does permit that a creditor is able to exact the payment from a foreigner. The Torah doesn't really give us explanations as to why that would be, but there might be a very logical reason for that, that would actually make a lot of sense. So that's one, and we're going to come to that in a moment. So that's one area of a mitzvah that's associated with the Shemitah year, is the fact that loans are forgiven. There's another aspect that's not here, but it's earlier in the Torah, and this is source number three. The Torah says the following: for 6 years you shall sow your land and shall gather in its increase, but at the seventh year you shall let it rest and lie fallow, that the poor of your people may eat it. And what they leave, the animal of the field shall eat. In the same way you shall deal with your vineyard and to your olive grove. Meaning, not only is there a prohibition, there's a requirement to release all my loans, any outstanding loans that I've not yet collected, but there's also a prohibition of working the land. And these are two things then that are related to Shemitah. One of them is the requirement to not work my land for the full year, and the other one is at the end of the year, to release all of my loans. I cannot collect. I will forgive all of loans, not to collect any of those loans. Those are the two mitzvot we have of Shemitah. Everyone still with me? Great. So, and by the way, if anyone, people have any questions or comments or anything, please feel free to either unmute and just shout it out or put it in the chat box. It's all good. And once again, if you came late and have not yet put your name in the chat box, please do so that we can make sure that you get credit. Okay, so moving on. Rabbi David Zvi Hoffman, an 1800s biblical commentary. So he writes the following. It's a long piece, and I broke it up into two different sources number 4 and 5, just because I wanted to not overwhelm with just a huge block of text, but I also think there's a lot here that's worth unpacking. So he writes in source number 4, he writes, the principle, I'm on the bottom of page 1, says the principle is that the Torah commands that loans be shmitad in the 7th year. However, this, according to the sage's interpretation, Shemitah does not mean postponing the time of payment, but a complete forgiveness of the payment of the debt. We will prove this below. He says, there are those, and we're going to come to this in a moment, but there are those who say, what type of society could this possibly be? You're going to tell me that every 7 years, all loans are going to be forgiven? That's a very bizarre thing to do, all loans forgiven. But he says that's what how the rabbis understand this. But as we're going to see, there were people who thought that maybe loan forgiveness is not really actual loan forgiveness. It's just, if we delay people, it's a difficult time. Okay, so you have more time to pay back your loan. It's a deadline extension. The Rabbi David Zvi Hoffman here is saying that's not how the rabbis understand it. And he's going to explain, he's going to prove why he thinks that's the case, that it should be a total, absolute forgiveness. And he says the following, in continuing, he says, there is another reason to be brought, based on logical reasoning, that the omission of funds should be at the end of the year. He says it also makes sense that the loans are forgiven at the end of the Shemitah year, right? You had 12 months of not working the land, we're talking about a society where your paycheck was based on the crops that you grew and how you're able to sell them, and you were not able to work your land at all for a full year. So you haven't had any real income. Now, all the produce was free, so I guess you weren't starving because you could just take it from anywhere, but you weren't selling anything. You weren't really building your wealth this year. It was really a doing nothing type of year. So he says, it makes sense that the forgiveness should therefore be at the end of the year. He says, after all, there is no doubt that the mitzvah of forgiving loans is related to the mitzvah of letting the land lie fallow, since the poor man who does not reap harvest of the year is unable to pay his debts. He says, look, those two mitzvot related to Shemitah make sense. You're not able to work the land, so you don't have really any steady income coming in. So now if you're in debt, how are you supposed to pay back your debts? At the end of the year, the Torah says, don't worry about your debts. They're totally forgiven. Keep the Torah. Don't work your land. Let the land lie fallow. And look, your debts will be forgiven. That's exactly the way he has it. And he says, and this is most beneficial at the end of the year, not at the beginning of it, as they have just harvested the harvest of the 6th year, and there is no reason to forgive debts. It seems that they generally used to claim debts at the end of the year of harvest. Therefore, if the Torah commands to prevent the collection of debts, it must be referring to that period of the year when the harvest of all the grain of the year usually ends, i.e. at the end of the year. In other words, what Rabbi Hoffman is explaining, he says it makes perfect sense for it to be a total forgiveness at the end of the 7th year. This also, by the way, he says this more explicitly, I didn't include it here, but this also explains why the forgiveness of the debts only extends to your brother, to fellow Jews. But the non-Jew, who is working his land the entire year of Shemitah, is not going to have the same needs. They was making a profit. He was buying and selling his own produce on his non-Jewish owned land for a full year, whereas the rest of the Jewish community was not. So Rabbi Hoffman is saying the idea that the loan forgiveness would extend only to your brothers, the Jews, says that's because the Jews were the ones who were in the most need of the forgiveness, because this is just a logical extension of the laws of not working your land. You can't work your land for a year. That means you can't really produce anything. You can't really have any. You're not going to really have much money at the end of the year. So how am I supposed to pay back my debts? Exactly, the debts are wiped clean. But if you could work the whole year, you have an income. You're really, you have more money. So there's no need to forgive your debt because you have more money now than you did before. Whereas the Jew who is keeping the land, who is keeping this mitzvah, not working the land, is actually doesn't have that. So that's a little piece that Rabbi Hoffman just adds here that sort of gives that in a little more context. Yes, Miriam.
Just to clarify, Shmitat Karka'ot is only in Eretz Yisrael, but Shmitat Ksafim, is that not everywhere?
Yes, correct. Sorry, thank you.
That argument of you weren't working the land so you don't have the money, would it just be as applicable for a Jew Chutz Laretz, right?
Yes. So just to, thank you for asking that question to force me to clarify. Yes, Shmitat Karka, the line not working the land, applies only in the land of Israel. Shmitat Ksafim, according to most, applies regardless, everywhere. So it's a fair point that the Rabbi Hoffman's argument here really works really well in the land of Israel, but doesn't extend nicely outside of the land of Israel. Good, that's a fair observation. Thank you for having me clarify that. There's what to talk about, whether Shmitat Ksafim really exists nowadays. We generally assume it does, that we still have this idea of Shmitat Ksafim and forgiving loans, but there is a fair amount of discussion about now that once the Jews were exiled from the land, maybe the Shmitat Ksafim doesn't exist in the same way. So it could be, there might be a way to sort of twist backward and make it work out, but the question is a fair question. Also, again, just to remind people, if you have not yet put your name in the chat box, please do so. Okay. So that's the first piece of Rabbi Hoffman that I think is worth noting. The second piece, which I think is also really relevant as I read the news, I'm an American. As I read the news coming out of I haven't looked at really any election results in a couple hours, but the big hot issue that's been going on and up in the courts right now is student loan forgiveness about the Biden administration wanting to push through certain forgiveness of loans for university students. There's a lot of legal discussion about it, about whether he has even the right to do that. But some of the moral arguments, I think, actually come up here that Rabbi Hoffman is going to address in a moment. There's a question in the chat box that I'm going to address in a moment. But so Moshe, who asked the question, well, I'll get there in a moment.
Rabbi, just to clarify here.
Yes.
The whole idea of the loans that you have, and the whole thing was that in Judaism, they didn't want to stop people from giving loans because it's a very good thing to do, but they were scared of Shmita, because that's what I'm talking about now.
Yeah.
So therefore, they came up with a heter or a legal fiction to help them do that. So really today, people do sign their desk, and then it's basically just a nice topic to discuss, but it has no practical application.
Yeah, so yes and no. Jerry's point was also what Moshe had raised, which is, doesn't Prusbul negate Shmitat Ksafim? Yet there is a concept of Prusbul. Prusbul, and it's, I'll talk about Prusbul, then we'll read Rabbi Hoffman, and then we can sort of think about how the two go hand in hand or don't go hand in hand. But the concept of Prusbul was that in the Talmudic times already, they were seeing, as Jerry was pointing out, they were seeing that people were not loaning. They were too afraid. The year six was coming. They didn't want to give a loan because if they give a loan, it was going to be forgiven. They didn't want to give that loan. So people just weren't giving a loan to people who needed money, who needed that loan. And Shmitat Ksafim was causing, like, it wasn't helping people. If anything, people were not getting the loans that they need. So Hillel made a takana. He said, we're going to do this Prusbul thing, which is a little bit of a legal fiction. It's complicated, not going to go into the specifics of how it works right now. But they did this Prusbul. Basically, everyone transferred their loans to the courts. The court has the right to collect. It's only individual people that don't have the right to collect. So it was a way they sort of get around Shmitat Ksafim and have people still be able to collect loans by transferring the loan to the court. The court would collect on my behalf, then give me the money. We're not really going to talk about Prusbul, and you'll see why as we continue. But it's a fair observation. I will say that yours truly actually gave a loan. I wrote a Prusbul, but then I also gave a loan and excluded it from the Prusbul so that they actually did have a loan that I gave that went to actually a poor Israeli farmer. so that I gave him a loan and the loan was wiped out. We'll see, by the end of this, we'll see various different pieces about whether that's good or not. We'll get there. But there are people who do give loans and have them be wiped out. That is a thing that still happens. So even though many people write Prusbul and we encourage people to write Prusbul, sometimes this still could be a relevant piece, and we'll see why as we continue going. But thank you for that, Moshe and Jerry, for bringing up the Prusbul side of things, because we're not really going to get deeply into it. But back to Rabbi Hoffman, in source number 5, the bottom of page 2. He says, up to this point, we have interpreted according to the position of the sages that the obligation of Shemitah is to completely forgive all debt. Although we need to reply to those who claim that the mitzvah does not mean a complete forgiveness, but only a postponement of the due date. He says, as he alluded to earlier, look, the rabbis hold, and we hold the halacha, the way we practice, Shemitah wipes out all loans. Grant, assuming you didn't do a Prusbul, the loan is completely wiped out. But, he says, there are many people who argue that it's not a wipeout, it's just a delay to the due date. And he continues. First of all, this is the second paragraph of source number 5 on page 2. First of all, they claim that it does not appear that one should give up the debts, since then no one would lend money to the people, and what's more, such a commandment would help dishonest people who make debts out of recklessness. So he says, the Torah, it's not like it took... Hillel was the first person to realize people weren't giving debts. No one would ever give a debt if they know it could be wiped out. And he says, also, this would be helping people who take on extreme amounts of debt in year 6 and blow all the money, do terrible things, waste all the money, and then it's only helping people be reckless with money by having people know that I can just take a loan and I don't have to worry about it, which parenthetically is part of when people are debating in the U.S. right now, loan forgiveness for student debt. This is actually one of the arguments that's being made, like, people, you're just encouraging people to take money out without having any idea how they're going to ever repay it. That's essentially what he's saying. And that's what people were saying. There's no way the Torah would ever permit a total wipeout of a debt because it just encourages reckless behavior. This claim, he says, knows nothing about the opinion of the Holy Torah and the situation on which this mitzvah is founded. He says, the Torah sees loan as charity given to the poor by the rich. The Torah always mentions giving loans in the context of the poor. And there was no possibility that the borrower would gain anything from the loan since the Holy Torah forbade charging interest. One gives a loan to the poor not for the sake of making a profit, only for the sake of a pure mitzvah. This one will not withhold charity out of fear of the Shemitah. He's saying that really the ideal person who's loaning money, no, he's not doing money as a profit maker. He's doing money, he's giving the loan because he wants to help someone in need. And I want to help someone in need, whether I get the money back or not is sort of immaterial, Rabbi Hoffman thinks. He says, the average person who's loaning the money is loaning to help someone else. I'd be happy to get my money back. But either way, either I'm performing the mitzvah of giving a loan, or I'm performing the mitzvah of tzedakah, but either way, I'm performing a mitzvah right now. And so I'm not going to not loan because I'm scared of the Shemitah year. Now, that doesn't really work with what we talked about with Prusbul, that people weren't, but at least ideally, Rabbi Hoffman is saying, we don't loan to make money, we don't loan and we're nervous that we're going to get it paid back, we loan because we want to help someone in need. And he continues, if he was not able to pay off his debts before the year of Shemitah, then all the more so he will not be able to pay them off after, and this poor man will always be sighing under the burden of his debts. He says there is no value to the claim that the act of debt forgiveness will help dishonest people, because on the contrary, the poor man who is unable to pay off his debts and be disgraced by it is more likely to follow the paths that are not straight, which is not the case. Sorry about that. He says the poor man who is unable to pay off his debts and be disgraced by it is more likely to follow the paths that are not straight. If I have no means of ever making, like, if there's no ability for me to do any better in life, so I'm going to finding whatever means I can to make ends meet, even if they're not so legitimate, which is not the case when he hopes to get rid of them at the end of the 7th year. He will hope this will encourage him to stay on the straight path. when the poor person knows my loans are going to be forgiven, they're going to be more motivated to be on the straight and narrow, to do the right thing, to pay back their loans what they can, to get a good job, they're going to be more motivated to do the right thing. The person who says, I'm in debt, and I just kept Shemitah, I have no income the whole year, and now I have all my debts, I'm not going to survive this, they're more likely to engage in unethical behavior. So Rabbi Hoffman says, if anything, the wiping of loans is actually for the betterment of society. It's not going to encourage bad behavior. He thinks it's actually the opposite. It actually encourages positive behavior. I think this Rabbi Hoffman piece is just a really, just when we're talking about loan forgiveness in general, like he's raising a lot of issues that even in 2022 are factors that come up in the discussion about, in general, mass scale loan forgiveness to people. And I just think it's worth, as we're talking about loan forgiveness, to just hear a little bit of how Rabbi Hoffman sort of envisions how complete loan forgiveness, more so than just delaying the debt when it's due, loan forgiveness actually has the potential to really benefit a society and benefit those who are more disenfranchised, as opposed to enabling those who are going to just do reckless and bad things in general. Any thoughts on this piece by Rabbi Hoffman before going more directly into how the loan forgiveness actually happens? What needs to happen for the loan to be forgiven?
Very, very idealistic.
Oh, yeah. Yes, very idealistic. And as we saw, it didn't really play out that way. The whole concept of the Prusbel was because no one was doing what Rabbi Hoffman said everyone would do. So it's sort of ironic. And Rabbi Hoffman, living in the 1800s, he knows that it didn't work out. But he still believes that the Torah, and this could be a whole separate conversation, but the Torah does believe in the potential of humankind to do the right thing, not the wrong thing. That's a whole separate conversation. But yeah, that's a true point. Yeah, I have a comment here. It seems that he is trying to overplay either end of society, that it will encourage good behavior as well as bad behavior. Yeah, meaning he could go either way, and he's rooting on the side of it actually ultimately encouraging good behavior and trying to discredit the fact that it could ever lead to bad behavior. Is there a middle ground? I'm not sure. What would be the middle ground? Is there a way that's neither good behavior nor bad behavior? It's just what do you mean exactly? Partial repayment. You have a partial loan. You pay back 70%, you get 30% forgiven. Interesting. The SIBA loan. The SIBA loan is a perfect payback 70%. Was that a hand raised, Moshe? Or a thumbs up? Or a, I don't know what that, or a wave? To me? Not to me. Excuse me. The idea of a partial repayment. Interesting. I'm not aware of anyone discussing that. Then maybe that is a middle ground that could be there. Okay, so I want to move now to page number 3 about how this works in practice. It's source number 6. The following idea. Interestingly, Rabbeinu Asher, this medieval rabbi, essentially describes, excuse me, a two-staged process here. It says, source number 6, top of page 3. He writes, as soon as the Shemitah enters, the court does not check to collect any debts, and the lender himself may not press the debtor, for the text says, he may not press his brother, for Shemitah has been declared to God. Meaning at the beginning of year 7, he loses the right to press. He can't go up to the guy and say, pay me back. Immediately when Shemitah enters, he may not press. But if the lender, of his own resolve, wishes to pay the debt, he need not state, I forgive the loan. Right? Year 7 starts. I cannot go up to the person who owes me money and say, pay me your money. But if he comes up to me and says, I'd like to pay you my money, I can very happily, gladly take it, put it in my pocket, no problem whatsoever. Once year 7 ends, then when he comes, I have to say, I forgive the loan. But the rush here is, what's interesting, is he's sort of creating a two-stage process. There's a period of time when it's, I have to hands off, but we still encourage, I think, the Torah is still very much encouraging the person to pay back a loan. Even though it's not yet been forgiven, we are giving the collector every right to very happily take that money. Once the seventh year ends, then he's got to say, I'm sorry, I declared the loan forgiven. I can't accept the money. But before that comes, he can happily take the money. So there's an element, it seems, according to the Rabbeinu Asher, there's an element of like this in-between where we can't press him, but we also encourage him to pay it back. So maybe the rabbi every week gives a Dvar Torah about how everyone should pay back their loans, but I can't go up to the debtor and say, give me my money. It's an interesting two-tiered approach that Rabbeinu Asher has. He's the only one who has this. We don't really practice this way, but he does believe that there's actually a two-staged process. It's not immediately wiped out. There's a transition period. Yeah, Miriam.
So are you saying that at the end of that period, when it's fully completed, that the person who borrowed can't even voluntarily give it back? You have to refuse the money?
Well, we're going to see. We're going to see. That's the next source right here. Talmud, Gittin, 37b, source number 7. In the case of one who repays his debt to his friend during the sabbatical year, question whether this means during the sabbatical year or after the sabbatical year, but it says during, the creditor must say to him, I abrogate the debt, I forgive it. But if the debtor then said to him, nevertheless, I want to repay you, he may accept it from him. As it is stated, and this is the manner, davar, of the abrogation, which is understood by commentaries to mean davar, like the word dibur, le daber, the creditor has to say the words, I forgive the debt. But if the debtor says, nonetheless, I want to pay you anyway, he's allowed to accept the money.
So Rabbi, is that considered a gift or is it a repayment of the loan?
Okay, we're getting there. We're getting there. That's where I want to go. That's exactly where I want to go. We're going to see. Okay. So here's, now take this. The Gemara continues. Rabba said, so this happens. Debtor comes to me, says, I want to pay you back. I say, don't worry about it. Shemitah happened. I forgive the loan. He says, no, I want to give it to you anyway. I accept the money. Let's say he doesn't say, I want to give it to you anyway. Let's say he says, oh, it's forgiven. Great. See you later. He starts walking away. Rabba says, the creditor is permitted to hang him until the debtor says this. Rashi's commentary, source number 8, to hang him. If the debtor wishes to retract his offer, the creditor may hang him from a tree, if he has the ability, until the debtor says, nevertheless, etc. He comes to me, Jared, I'd like to repay my loan. I say, I'm sorry, Shemitah happened. I can't collect it. He says, okay. He walks away. I can grab him, basically torture him, until he says, okay, I'll give you the money, I'll give you the money. That's what Rashi says. So now Paul asked, is this a gift or is this a repayment of the loan? What is this? You tell, what do you think this, what does this look like?
He's just been threatened with death and he's repaying the money?
That's what Rashi says happened. This sounds like this would be a gift under duress, which we're going to come to this in a little bit. We typically don't consider a gift under duress to be a legitimate gift. If I force you to give me a gift, it's not really mine. That's theft. So
is Rabba saying this tongue in cheek? Obviously.
He's Rabba is saying it seriously. I didn't. The Gemara continues that this actually happened.
So we're going from a very, very generous social policy of forgiving deaths to a vigilante murder for...
Well, I don't think he's not... The creditor doesn't have the ability to commit murder here. But he can make the debtor's life miserable, I think, in other words. Now, this is only because the debtor approached him initially. The way this played out is the debtor came and said, I'd like to pay my loan. The creditor said, Shemitah... Then the debtor said, okay, fine, forget it. If the debtor never came up in the first place, this can't happen. It's only because the debtor initially approached and said, I would like to repay the loan.
I mean, this death thing, is this anything like we say that...
You just got muted, yeah, sorry.
If you take someone's money, it's like you've killed them?
Interesting. I don't think so. I think that's more of like...
With
Esav, yeah.
Esav's son or something in Yaakov.
Yeah. That's the discussion that he made him poor. He didn't kill, yeah. I think that's more of like an agadic type of idea. I don't know if that necessarily has halachic ramifications.
I think we're all struggling with this death threat, so I'm trying to find a way out of it.
Yeah. I mean, he's not... He can't kill him. He can't kill him. Oh, yeah, Eliphaz. That's... Moshe's giving us the background there. Thanks, Moshe. You can't kill him, but he's still able to threaten him or make his life miserable, I'll say. And this is the way Rashi understands it. Rabbeinu Asher says, we saw him earlier, source number 9, he says, there's no way that's possibly true. He says, Rabbi said that he hangs him until he says, etc. This is the way Rashi explained it. He says, this does not appear correct. For if so, you have negated the entire rule of Shemitah. It doesn't make sense. The whole concept is that the creditor is not allowed to torture the debtor until the debtor pays. Rather, it means he hangs his eyes. That is to say, he sits and looks longingly until the debtor says, nevertheless. I mean, the creditor just says, like, you know, please give me my money back, please, please. He doesn't want to go, he's not, I mean, it sort of butchers the language of the Hebrew, I think, but it's much more palatable than what Rashi said, just like, okay, just hang him, by, hold him up by his feet till he's willing to pay you. I can't force him, right? The loan has been forgiven. What I'm essentially asking him to do is giving me a gift. I'm not asking him to pay me back my loan. I'm asking him to give me a gift. That's the way the Rush is basically understanding it. So I can't torture him to force him to pay me back. Now, there could be a little bit of a defense of Rashi. And that's in source number 10. The Rita Tirani, Rabbi Yishai of Tirani, and on the Gemara in Gittin, source number 10. The way he understands, and I sort of referred to this below, above, when I said it's sort of like Zed Devar HaShemitah, that the creditor just needs to say the words. Meaning as long as the creditor says the words, I forgive the loan, maybe that's all the Torah really requires of him. Meaning, source number 10. This passage of the Talmud means that with mere words, when he says, I forgive the loan, he fulfills this mitzvah, and afterward it is permissible for him to collect his debt. Rava says, he may hang him, etc., since he fulfilled the mitzvah and said, I forgive the loan. But if the debtor did not come to him at all, the creditor cannot force him to pay, for he has not yet fulfilled any mitzvah. In other words, and this is what we're going to come back to in a little bit, what he's saying here, he's saying that when I say I forgive the loan, I fulfilled my obligation. And I can still collect my loan. Meaning, it's just like a magic formula, so to speak. When I say the loan is forgiven, that doesn't really forgive the loan. What that does is it fulfills the Torah's requirement that I have to say those words, I forgive the loan. But the loan still exists. And I have every right to still torture him to collect that loan because this is my money in your hands. This is not, when I forgave that loan, I did not give you this money. When I forgave the loan, I literally had, it was lip service, literally lip service. I fulfilled the mitzvah by saying these words, but it is still my money, still in your hand. You need to give it to me. And I can torture you, I can press you until you give me that money because that is my money that you're holding on to. My forgiveness of the loan did not give you anything. It's really my money. We're going to come back to this idea in a little bit. Yeah, Miriam.
Is that not simply making a mockery of what we're seeing in the Torah? The Torah is pretty clear, and then you're saying, use some words, say I forgive it, but don't mean it, and you have every legal right to take someone to court and get the money back? And
not to court, just vigilante, but yeah. Yeah.
I mean, could you take the person to court? If all you had to do is say, I forgive, then I'm taking care of the halacha. But now we have commercial things that say, I could go take you to court and get
so
the money back.
It's an interesting question. It seems that according to this position, maybe I could. Because I have fulfilled my technical... What you're saying is... You're saying it really sharply and strongly. But essentially what we're saying is, the idea of forgiving a loan is not... It's not what we think when we say, oh, the loan's forgiven, it's fair game. That's not what it means. Maybe it removes a little bit of pressure from the debtor. But it doesn't mean that the debtor has free reign to do whatever he wants. Now, maybe, I don't know, maybe I could actually press him. All I have to do is make sure that I've said that the loan is forgiven. But I can still do what I want to not do anything that I want. But I can still push to collect that loan. I mean, what's bothering you, I think, bothers a lot of people, which is why the Rabbeinu Asher said what he said, which is that the most the creditor can do is say, like, please, can you give it back? And, like, sort of try to guilt trip him. But that's the max he can do because of what you're bothered about. This is what the Rush said. The Rush said, if you say, like Rashi, you've totally just taken Shemitah and thrown it out the window. Shemitah Kesafim. And that's, but I'm saying this might be a way that you could try to justify Rashi is to say that really, it's a little bit of lip service. You're just supposed to say the words. Zed Zvara Shemitah. This is the words of Shemitah. You have to say the words. You fulfilled the mitzvah, and now you can go on your merry way. We're going to come back to this. We'll come back to this. Any other thoughts or questions before moving on? Okay. So I want to look at a couple more things. Who cancels the loan? This is an extension of what we just saw. Top of page 3, who cancels the loan? The king or the creditor? So here's the following case. Source number 11 on the top of page 4. Rabbi Chezkiah asked Rabbi Avigdor the Kohen regarding a case where the lender, after more than 7 years, sued the debtor for payment. And he replied that his debt had already been canceled in Shemitah. But in the year of the Shemitah, the debtor did not come to him and the loaner did not say the words, I forgive the loan. Perhaps, since the Shemitah time had passed, it's now been 10 years since the loan. Shemitah happened 5 years ago. He never came to me. I never verbalized anywhere near the time period of Shemitah. I never verbalized the words, I forgive the loan. In fact, for years, I've been saying, I don't want to forgive the loan. I want to get paid. I've never verbalized the words, I forgive the loan. So now, I want to get paid. It's been 6 years since the last Shemitah. I just lost my pace. Here we are. It's been years since the last Shemitah. The question was, perhaps, since the Shemitah time had passed, and he did not say, I forgive the loan, he's no longer obligated to forgive the loan until the next Shemitah. Meaning, the way he sees it is that maybe, and this is maybe a close reading of the passage of the Gemara that we saw in source number 7, maybe what has to happen is sometime close to the time of Shemitah Kesafim, sometime close to the end of the 7th year, sometime in the 7th year, at the end of the 7th year, there has to be a conversation between the Malva and the Lova, between the creditor and the debtor. The debtor has to go to the creditor, and the creditor has to say, I forgive the loan, now the debtor is free. The debtor is free. But the creditor has to verbalize those words to the debtor, I forgive the loan. But now it's been years since that. And the next Shemitah is in next year. So now the question was, maybe because I never verbalized as the creditor, I never verbalized, I forgive the loan. Maybe I have never actually forgiven the loan. Maybe the loan is still standing. People understand what he's saying right now? If you never verbalize the words, I forgive the loan, maybe the loan is still collectible. That's what he's saying. It doesn't matter how much time has passed. And the answer and the conclusion, according to the matter, it appears that in the 7th year, debts are relinquished by the king, with a capital K, meaning Hashem, even though the loaner did not say, I forgive the loan. And this is what Rabbi Avigdor answered, I received tradition that the 7th year cancels debts on its own, even without one saying the words, I forgive the loan. And according to him, Mordechai, it doesn't, as soon as Shemitah starts, as soon as the 7th year ends and the 8th year begins, whether I speak anything or not, the loans are completely wiped out. This is a different idea than what we were saying before, where it's the Shemitah, ani meshamet, I forgive the loan, is somehow like a lip service. Now maybe I'm still required to say it, but that's not what causes the debt to be canceled. The loan is canceled immediately. By God himself, God Almighty cancels the loan, whether I said anything or not, whether I wanted to cancel, it's canceled, regardless of what I do or say, the loan is canceled. That's the way the Mordechai understands it. But it's interesting. The Yoreim, also a very early Ashkenazi source, has a slightly different perspective. A debt that has gone through the 7th year is not allowed to be withheld from the borrower without the permission of the creditor. Meaning, the creditor needs to give it. Volitionally, he has to want to give it. For so long as the creditor has not forgiven the debt, the borrower must pay. But the borrower must invite the creditor to court for the latter to forgive the debt in accordance with the will of the creator, and the court will coerce the creditor to say, I forgive. meaning it is a legitimate debt that he owes me until I say the words, I forgive the debt. And I have to say the words, I forgive the debt, and the debtor can take me to court to force me to say, I forgive the debt. But unless I say the words, I forgive the debt is still standing. It's still a legitimate debt. And if, God forbid, the creditor were to die and never enunciate those words, the debtor may still have to pay the estate that loan. Now, we get into other questions about inheritance and pieces like that, but and the core idea of what he's saying is that if the creditor has not said the words, I forgive the loan is not forgiven. It has to be done by the creditor. Unlike the Mordechai, who said, it's canceled automatically by God himself, God Almighty Hashem. It's the Malka, the king, declares it null and void. It's no good. The loan is forgiven. The Urim says, no, the creditor has to say the words, I forgive. Now, I can be forced by the court, but they have to force me to forgive the loan. And if I somehow fought against the court for however long and never said that, I could still collect that loan. They won't be happy with me, but I can collect that loan because that loan still exists. I have to verbally say, I forgive the loan. Everyone still with me? Okay. So I want to come now to the question that we alluded to earlier that we started with, which is ultimately the question of who owns the forgiven money? Like whose money is this actually? If I forgave the loan, let's say I forgive the loan. Comes to me, I say I forgive the loan, don't worry about it. Is this now the debtor? He's now has income? This is his money that now, like the way that Canada sort of sees this is a SIBA loan. You have to report this. This is income. Is that how we understand this for Shemitah? Shemitah wipes out the loan. I say, Meshamadani, I forgive the loan. Is this considered his money? And he would have to declare it. It's reported. It's income. Or is it still my money? He just happens to be holding on to it. We've seen already elements of this come up in the various sources that we've seen already about the idea like that I can take it from him. I can hang it from a tree and take my money back. We've seen elements of this already. I want to address this sort of head on now. So Rabbi Asher Weiss, a contemporary Rav, and lives in Israel, source number 13 at the bottom of page 4, says it was stated in Gittin 37b that one who repays a debt in the seventh year, he should say to him, I forgive it. And if he said to him, nevertheless, I want to pay it anyway, he may receive the payment. And Rava said, right, that you can hang him up from a tree. And Rashi explained, or Rava said you can hang him up, or hang him. Rashi said that means you can literally hang him from a tree until he says he wants to pay it back. Right, so he gave that whole piece. Now, Rav Asher Weiss continues. He says, at first glance, these words are puzzling and they have no meaning. How can he hang this fellow from a tree until he gives him as a gift? Behold, this is complete robbery. And even after the fact, this does not count as a gift, as we see from the Talmud, Baba Batra 48b, that when one hangs someone from a tree until the latter gives a gift, the gift is not a valid gift. Since the debt was forgiven, how can the creditor force him to pay? Behold, there is no debt here at all. Right? This is sort of the question that we asked before. Is this a gift? What we're saying, I forgave the loan is forgiven, whether it's because I said the words, whether because God himself forgave the loan no longer exists, this is not my money anymore. Me hanging him up to have him give me this as a gift, that's called theft. I can't do that. That's stealing. That's not my money to take. And what Rav Asher Weiss ultimately tries to argue is he says that basically Shemitah doesn't mean that my loan is forgiven and it's you don't owe me anymore. What he basically argues is that in reality, all Shemitah is that I no longer can force you to pay me, but that's still my money in your hand. And in certain circumstances, you have to pay. I can get you to pay me that money back. That is not your money. That is my money that I am not allowed to ask you for. But it's my money. And so you can't claim that as your money. It's my money. And as an example, he brings this piece from the Sefer HaChinuch, just a short line, and maybe it's clearer in the Hebrew than it is in the English, but the Sefer HaChinuch, early work of Jewish law, of Halacha, he says, Shiyashmit kol halvotav b'shvit, you release all the loans, la'azov ha'chavot b'shanat ha'shmita, to abandon all of his debts on the sabbatical year. It doesn't mean that they don't. It just means I leave them. I leave them sitting on the table. They're still mine. You still owe me this money. This is still my money in your hands. You can't claim this as, look, I got more money. You may have, really, if you want to, like, in the God's big ledger in the sky of who owes whom money, you owe me money. I can't collect it, but you owe me money. That's essentially the way Rabbi Asher Weiss explains it. And that's what he thinks the Sefer Chinuch says that also. In all these other sources, anyone who says that I can go and force you to give me the money back by hanging him up on a tree. So someone asks, does abandon equal forgive? So what Rabbi Asher Weiss is essentially saying is that abandonment equals forgiveness as far as Shemitah is concerned, but not as far as whose money it is. Right? It's my money. I forgave the loan as far as fulfilling the mitzvah of Shemitah, but it's my money. And so I can hang you upside down and take until you give me that money, because it's not called, you know, stealing from you because I'm forcing you to give me a gift. This is me forcing you to give me what's rightfully mine. So it's sort of forgiveness, but not total forgiveness. And that I think is what Rav Asher Weiss is trying to say here, is that Shemitah is not like totally blank slate, clean, you own nothing, you know, go into the new year, you have no debts, you're totally in the clear, everything is good. Rav Asher Weiss is saying essentially not that. You still have these debts. You still ought to pay these back. Now, the creditor doesn't have the right to force you to pay it back, but he sort of does. Once he's said the words Mishabed Ani, once he's forgiven the loan, he now sort of can, because you're actually still holding on to his money. So I said earlier that I gave this poor Israeli farmer a loan that was then forgiven. You know, I'm not going to hang him upside down to force him to give me the money back. But in theory, and maybe I could, according to Rav Asher Weiss, and that farmer, somewhere in his whatever, in his bank account in Shemayim, he owes me money. I'm never going to collect it. But Rav Asher Weiss would say, he still is in debt. This is not his money. This is Jared's money. It's not his money. And he really should pay it back. And Jared is empowered to do whatever he needs, even hang the guy upside down to get his money back. It's like a fascinating idea. Totally changing the way we're looking at Shemitah entirely. That really, this is my money that the debtor still has. It's not the debtor's money. The Ramban is quoted, Nachmanides in source number 15, is quoted in the opposite direction. And he gives fascinating proof for it. So this is Rabbeinu Asher, who we've seen several times already. The Rush says, Nachmanides was asked whether the lender is required to return the loan document to the borrower. Right, in a typical case of halva, in a typical case of loan, and once the loan is repaid, so I no longer can keep the shtar that says that, you know, Reuven owes me money, I have to give Reuven the shtar, because I have to give Reuven the document, otherwise I keep on collecting from him. So I have to give him the document once he repays me. So the question that Ramban was asked is, after Shemitah, does the creditor have to give the document back to the lobe, to the borrower? And he writes, his answer, the seventh year releases the loan completely. And even if the lender wants to violate Torah law and demand payment after the seventh year, the debtor is exempt. Therefore, the lender cannot withhold the document. Like we indicated earlier, that all repaid or nullified loans, the document itself goes to the borrower, so too the ruling is here. The way the Ramban is sort of explaining that it's really the debt still exists, I just can't collect it. He's presenting this. The debt exists the same way that a debt exists after the debt has been repaid. When the debt has been repaid, it doesn't exist anymore. When the debt has been shmitad, it doesn't exist anymore. I give the document back. So someone asks, don't we also give a receipt, essentially, to indicate that payment was done? We also do that. And there's a discussion where the receipt is given. If we have two documents floating around, sometimes we want to write the receipt on the document itself, that we'll give the document on the document, we'll write, this debt has been repaid, signed by signatures, and therefore we don't have to have too many people holding it, because we're always concerned that someone's going to lose their document and then have to be forced to pay or not. It's a little, where that receipt goes is a little, it's a subject to a big debate. Actually, we're talking about it in our Beit Midrash on Fridays, in Masech Ketubot. There's some serious discussion about where exactly the receipt is written. But yes, so there is a receipt that's also given, but it's If that was too confusing and way off topic, you can just put that aside. But they're not only give returning the loan document, but also there's also receipt, but where the receipt is written. Not for now. Bottom line, so if you didn't follow that, just ignore the last, 2 minutes. Bottom line.
It just totally accounts for the bottom line.
Bottom line. It seems, whose money is this? It looks like there could be a machloket here between the Ramban, the Nachmanides, and Rav Asher Weiss. The Ramban is unequivocally saying, this loan is totally gone. It's totally not mine. When I forgave the loan, that is now his money. It would make perfect sense that in all sense of the word, it is his money. Call it his income. And that's the way I would think the SIBA loan would work, a loan forgiven by the Canadian government. You still have to pay income tax on it because that is not the... It is now owned by me. The loan was forgiven. It is now entirely mine. It is new income that I have. But what I was thinking was that maybe, according to Rav Asher Weiss, if we were to look at... I mean, we're not going to consider the SIBA loan forgiveness as being like Shemitah. But if we were to try to imagine that type of idea, if it were a Shemitah, I think you would not have to pay income tax on that. It's not really your money. I think maybe that money would actually be still owned by the creditor, and the creditor has every right to somehow extract that money back. And so I can't say, well, this is actually my money because he forgave the loan. It's not actually my money. It's actually his money that he can't collect from me, but it still is his money. And maybe we wouldn't necessarily say that he has to pay income tax on that because that wasn't his income. He has to give that back at some point. And so the creditor can't demand it, but he still has to give it back. So I thought maybe there was a way to sort of play this into the loan forgiveness as well, that do we consider the forgiven loan income that's taxable or whether it's not? And maybe that's a machloket. You could present it between, they're unequal because the Ramban is significantly older than Rav Asher Weiss, but the way Rav Asher Weiss understands the Sefer HaChinuch, let's say, where the loan is not really, it's forgiven, but that I can still collect it. Whereas the Ramban would say, the loan is totally forgiven, and that is now the lova, the debtor's income. That's his income. He now got new money that he didn't have before, and so we would maybe have to pay tax on that. That's what I would like to suggest within this machloket here in these last two sources. Any thoughts or questions on that?
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for coming. If you have not yet put your name in the chat box, please do so. That way we can make sure that you get credit for having been here. And happy to entertain any more questions or comments or thoughts on this. Still have a couple more minutes left if anyone wants to hang around, ask any questions. Otherwise, thank you everyone for coming and for learning. Thank you again to Zeifmans, to Steve Roth and Reem and the Bayit and Shari Shemaim for sponsoring this and having this happen.
Thank you again, Rabbi. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.